Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hey everyone, how's it going? It's Anthony Cazenza, and this is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. We are so happy to have you with us once again. And I guess, officially, we are on to, 2019. I mean, even though it's now February 2019. The Super Bowl's behind us. It is now the 2019 NFL season, and we have a lot to talk about, including the hiring of Zach Taylor. And with me, as always, is John Sheeran, who gave me a great assist on the CincyJungle.com website because I was having some issues with that. But John, how are you? New era of Bengals football has been ushered in.
Yeah, you've always carried the backpack on here, and I've always been hiding in the backpack, so might as well pull my weight at some point.
That's right.
It's been an interesting 24 hours. I'm wearing my banana hat because the Bengals seem to slip on banana in this past afternoon in the hours after Zach Taylor press conference, and we'll get into what I kind of mean by that. But it's mixed emotions, I guess, because it's something brand new to us. It's something completely new to me because, again, this is like the first time I've been a Bengals fan and Marvin Lewis hasn't been the coach, and that's just a big deal in itself. And Taylor has a lot to prove now that he's officially here, and some of the early judgments are going to be made on, the initial decisions he will make as head coach, and then involves building together the coaching staff, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But it's a mixed feelings for me personally right now, and I guess that's good and bad, in kind of both ways.
A different era of Bengals football for sure, and I guess we could just jump kind of right into it. Your thoughts on Taylor when he was introduced as the Bengals head coach on Monday, your thoughts on how he presented himself, obviously a stark contrast in a lot of different ways to Marvin Lewis, especially Marvin Lewis in Lewis's later years. Your thoughts on how he presented himself, how he handled the media, aside from I think you and I both got a funny tweet from a fellow listener that showed the TV airing of it cutting out of Taylor's press conference. But aside from that, your thoughts on him, how he presented himself, and, kind of that young, fresh approach maybe that he brings to the Bengals.
Yeah, so when we were talking, last month about potential replacements for Lewis, Taylor's name was obviously one of the names. He was the first guy that they interviewed, but most of the discussion was surrounding like Bieniemy and maybe even more so Todd Monken. And, in the week leading up to Taylor getting hired, he wasn't, a serious consideration, because people mainly like preferred Bieniemy. But when talking about Taylor, we discussed the Bengals would not be interested in Taylor just because he's an associate of Zach Taylor or of Sean McVay, excuse me. The Bengals would be interested in Taylor because they think that he brings a similar mentality and a similar fresh mindset and values and cultural changes that a McVay type coach would bring. Because McVay is special because, there's no one really like him in the way that his mind is built around the game and his memory and everything about that is so special. So if Taylor was to be hired by the Bengals, and if he was to be so heavily coveted by them. He would have had to have wowed them in a similar way that McVay obviously wowed the Rams. And I think we kind of saw some of that on display in the introductory press conference. And obviously that press conference in itself was a breath of fresh air, not just because of anything specific that he said, but just in the way of how it was so different than all those other Marvin Lewis press conferences. But I do believe that, Marvin's first press conferences in general were kind of like that, where he kind of brought this reinvigorated energy to an organization that was so stale at the time. But now this organization is stale from all the years of him. So Taylor kind of brings that recent change. And that's exactly kind of what we were hoping to see him, just hearing him speak for that half hour was definitely, worth that wait, and kind of confirms what we kind of thought about him. And just in general, he just seems like the kind of guy that we had hoped, what a 35-year-old head coach, first-time head coach would sound like. He sounds like he can carry himself very well, even though he's never exactly been in this position before. But obviously, he's well wired. Grew up in a football family. Obviously, had those similar ideals to the Brown family, and obviously Duke Tobin as well. And it appears that both of them have kind of connected. And obviously Bengals fans adore Duke Tobin for the work that he's done under the restrictions of the Brown organization. So if they can kind of get on the same page and establishing, a process of building a legitimate championship level team, then this is obviously a great direction to go in. And most of the majority of things that Taylor said for the most part was just coach speak and not really should be, taken with a grain of salt and whatnot. But some of the little things he talked about, communication and an attacking mentality and kind of those different things that would allude to potential alterations in how the Bengals will approach the offseason and maybe in season management. And I think that's definitely refreshing to hear and definitely something that was well worth us waiting to hear.
So with the Taylor hire came a lot of social media reactions from Bengals players, high profile Bengals reactions. Do you buy that they are the excitement that they are showing? They kind of superimposed pictures of themselves next to Taylor. Like they did like the basically they took the Bengals that kind of what they did on their official announcement, superimposed pictures of themselves and said like, "Hey, welcome coach," all that kind of stuff. I think you saw from Dunlap. I think you saw from Dre Kirkpatrick. I mean, you saw social media clips of Taylor greeting Andy Dalton in the locker room, and that they seemed to be very chummy. Do you buy that, or is that simple towing the company line? Where these are people, these are guys that are paid well by the organization, and they said, I kind of gotta do the right thing, if you will, and support the new coach. Some of these guys, there's questions if Dre Kirkpatrick's going to be on the roster next year. There are questions if Andy Dalton's going to be on the roster next year. I mean, do you buy that? Do you buy the excitement, or is that simple just kind of, hey, I'm being a good employee and doing what I'm supposed to do?
I think Dre earned himself a lifetime contract with what he did with Jeremy Hill the other day. But that's a whole other thing.
We're going to talk about that later.
We'll definitely talk about that. But I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest, because as we all know, players love Marvin. He was a player's coach through and through, and obviously they like Dunlap, I think, had a tweet. He kind of held back some reservations, I guess, want to see what kind of defensive philosophy he brings in. Didn't exactly display a great amount of excitement when he texted. I think it was a WLWT reporter as an anonymous guy. But yeah, for the other guys, I think, even for like the majority of this team, the core of this team has been around for 6 or 7 years. And even then, 6 to 7 years is kind of a long time for a head coach in the NFL, because 16 years is such an anomaly and an outlier in itself. So 6 to 7 years, it's kind of more even so on the long side. So Marvin Lewis was around for a long time for even the guys who haven't even hit 30 yet. So for those guys who are welcoming Taylor with open arms, I think it's a refreshing change even for them, even if they weren't here for the majority of Lewis's tenure. And for the most part, the guys who were with Lewis in the 2000s, they're all gone, except for maybe a couple of guys that maybe won't be on the team next year with their expiring contracts. But I do think that there is definite, relief that some change is happening, and it's a guy that maybe most of them can relate a little bit more, obviously because of not just the age difference, but a different type of coaching background and philosophy, because Taylor's obviously an offensive guy with an offensive background, and he's probably a lot more aggressive and a lot less conservative as a coach coming in immediately than Lewis has turned himself to be 16 years on the job. So I think with those changes has sparked this welcoming atmosphere from the players with Taylor, because I think for the most part, you know, I don't think this whole rebuild is going to take 1 year. I think a lot of familiar faces will stick around for 2019 to see kind of what they have. And, you know, this team and where they are in their position, it probably will take, you know, 2 or 3 years for them to truly be competitive again, because remember, they won 19 games in the past 3 years. They're not contenders right now. You can make an argument that they're the worst team in their own division. So with that said, I think like for now, everyone's kind of on the same base, the same playing field and level of job security. And they kind of, you know, are welcoming this new change and want to do their best to get, you know, to impress him, to display that they have value for the next, not just 1 or 2 years, but 3 or 4 years, even for those guys who have yet to hit their 30s and whatnot. So I think that there is a little bit of, you know, got to welcome the new guy, even though I like my old coach, but definitely a refreshing welcome change for most of those guys who should be excited about a coach that they can probably perform a little bit better under and will be utilized better under them.
Yeah, AJ Green mentioned that he had his best years under Jay Gruden in that play action style offense. He mentioned that recently, and obviously that's something Zach Taylor is going to, you would think, bring to the Bengals. And look, I mean, there are a number of people that are loyal to Marvin Lewis, whether it's because he brought them in to the Bengals organization, drafted them, whatever. But I think there are a number of players that are, you know, more than ready for a change, and more than ready. I mean, Zach Taylor, for the most part, is he's barely older, for better or for worse, barely older than many players on this roster. I mean, I think he's older than all of them. But you got your Andy Daltons, your Geno Atkins, your Carlos Dunlaps that are, you know, early 30s or whatever, and they're right around his age gap. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Kazenza. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast, and we are talking about the Zach Taylor hire as the Bengals' new head coach. You can get this program on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, on Megaphone, and on CincyJungle.com, as well as our YouTube channel, so check that out. John, one of the questions, I guess, in the Taylor hire is, you know, who made the decision, who was kind of the people who pulled the strings, if you will, in order to get him hired. Mike Brown, in his introductory press conference of Taylor, kind of mentioned basically that Duke Tobin is the guy who, you know, who kind of headed up the coaching search. He brought up a lot of candidates. He headed up the interviews, all that kind of stuff. And he was the guy that brought in Zach Taylor, if you will.
Yeah.
He hasn't been named GM, an official title, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, that's his job. There's a lot riding on this hire, right? I mean, this is the first new coaching hire in the Duke Tobin era. This is the first new coaching hire in, you know, basically in 16, 17 years since Marvin Lewis has come in. And it's young, it's risky. He's overhauling the staff, all that stuff. I mean, is it fair to say that Duke Tobin, basically his job is riding on this hire?
Yeah, and he's been here for so long because obviously they wanted to keep the Lewis group kind of intact, and he came along with Lewis. But that's an interesting point, because, you know, you talk about just job security in general with the Bengals and with those guys in the front office. You never really question that. But if this was entirely a Duke Tobin move, and Duke Tobin was the reason why Taylor was so well liked within the Bengals brass and why they impressed so much, if those comments were basically alluding to, in all intents and purposes, meaning that Duke Tobin was impressed by this hire, then yeah, I do think that as of right now that they're connected, and that's the reason why he was behind those microphones for the introductory press conference alongside with Taylor and Mike Brown in general. But this is still Mike Brown, and it's just kind of ridiculous. Like Paul Danner Jr. is on Twitter, like, you know, Duke Tobin is the GM in everything but name. Why doesn't he have the name, though?
Because right. Right.
Mike Brown is still who he is, and he's just never going to change. And if there's any time where he's going to publicly give away power in a move such as that, just naming Duke Tobin Jim, he's just not going to do it. And no matter what, he's probably going to go to the grave with those values set in stone. But essentially, Duke Tobin does have more power. We've kind of known this for the past couple of years when he's had more influence in the war room and influence in bringing in guys and retaining guys and in the offseason in general. But now this was his first opportunity to kind of really reset the franchise, bring in a new voice and leadership. And if they were trusting Tobin to kind of find that, then that kind of also, you know, concludes the other point that, you know, the Black Bruins are also kind of overtaking Brown from a power standpoint. And obviously both Troy and Katie had obvious influence on this hire as well, but they also, I think, have a certain brain trust and cohesion with Tobin and their similar values and philosophy. So it's kind of that four person brain trust of the Bengals front office with Mike kind of still overseeing things, still not wanting to publicly give up power and not, you know, give away any leverage that he has at 80 something years old. But at the same time, this is kind of Duke Tobin's era at this point. And wherever Zach Taylor goes, Duke Tobin goes, we don't know how big of a leash Taylor does have. You know, he did sign a multi-year contract, but this isn't Lewis now. So this is a whole new game. And this is a whole new ballpark of possibilities, whether or not Taylor succeeds or fails. And, you know, what's kind of the repercussions of maybe something bad instead of something good. And that's going to be something interesting to watch.
Does it frustrate you that, I mean, like I said, for all intents and purposes, Duke Tobin is the GM. Mike Brown continues to hold these annual press conferences, and to both Mike Brown's credit and detriment, he's not a Jerry Jones type of owner where he hogs the microphone, he hogs the limelight. But in that way, he is not able to clarify a lot of things. He has hinted over the past couple of years that, hey, you know, basically it was Marvin, his daughter, his son-in-law, and Duke Tobin that have kind of run the show in terms of decision-making. He kind of said as much again with the Zach Taylor hiring that it was Duke Tobin's call. They supposedly interviewed 9 people, according to Mike Brown. I mean, does this frustrate you where he's like, dude, Duke Tobin's a GM. He's not saying that. I mean, right? I mean, we can sit here and say for all intents and purposes, but still,
he's not saying it.
He's not giving him the title. Does that frustrate? I mean, to me, I'm sitting here going, dude, just tell us, right? I mean, just say he's the GM.
Like, I know some people equate like senior citizens to babies in terms of stubbornness, or like it's just kind of pulling teeth. And I think that's basically what we're doing, because he's so ingrained in his ways that he's not going to change. And this is just who he is. And whenever you want progress from someone who just will not change at a certain point in his life, it's just pulling teeth from it. And eventually, when push comes to shove and butts aren't in seats, then he's going to make the necessary changes to obviously appease the masses in this case. But I think we're going to have to wait a little bit longer before Tobin is officially given that title, but it doesn't really matter, but it still kind of matters. And I guess that's kind of the point that you're making where, you know, if he's the GM, just call him the GM, but it just won't happen with a guy like Mike.
Yeah. He's set in his ways, and you know, who knows, maybe it is he's 83. Maybe it is an appeasement type of maneuver by some of these other people in the front office that said, look, he's still here. He's still kind of the owner. We're calling the shots. It doesn't matter what the titles are or whatever, but this is our guy. Regardless, it does sound like this is a Duke Tobin hire and not a Mike Brown hire. So you kind of have to sit here and say, well, you know, they're obviously every one of us who have been fans for a long time look back to David Shula and say, oh, you know, young guy, and that's where this hire is heading. But this doesn't seem to be the guy that Mike Brown pulled the trigger on. This seems to be the guy that Duke Tobin signed off on and the other powers that be signed off on, regardless of title.
Yeah, and going back to pulling teeth, like Mike allowed Duke Tobin to hire a head coach. Is he going to allow Duke Tobin to spend money in March?
Yeah.
That's the next question, right? That's the next step of if Tobin is truly in charge, or unless he's just like, he's like the king, but the hand of the king is still kind of pulling the strings, like Joffrey and Tywin Lannister. We don't know that yet, and we won't know that.
That's a Game of Thrones reference, everybody, in case you didn't know. Okay.
I mean, who doesn't watch Thrones? But anyways, yeah, like who's truly pulling the strings?
Because those of us who cannot afford HBO or something, I guess, are the people who
I don't pay for HBO either. I'm pretty sure not a lot of people do either. But anyways, people say teams don't win or lose in March, but that's just not the case. Maybe that's what the Bengals tell people, but you win in this league not by spending money. Now they spend money on presumably a hotshot young head coach. Let's go out and get some quality free agents and more than just one on a 1 year, rental deal like they have for the past 5 years. Let's actually do something that matters in March when you're building a championship quality team, which is presumably what Zach Taylor wants to do. We'll see if that happens.
Dion DTS in the live YouTube chat says, if this in all caps, by the way, if you say something in all caps, you know, that person's meaning business. If this turns back to the Shuley years, I'm moving. So there you go.
Why did they sell your house?
Well, that's not my decision. That's Dion's decision. But, there was something that I thought Bengals fans should, I don't know if you want to say, gravitate toward the Bengals or endear themselves to Mike Brown or whatever, but he basically said, and I don't know if this is a slippery slope or not, but he basically said they felt the effects of fan ticket sales, probably letters they received, whoever or whatever, that this decision to move to Zach Taylor was basically based off of that. They felt the reverberations of fan reactions, especially late last year, and the possibility of Marvin Lewis retiring, and they said, we have to make a move. What do you make of that, John?
Well, I think it'll kind of lead into another topic that we're talking about, but at the end of the day, Mike Brown does care about making money.
Yeah.
And however much, of that revenue comes from the 20,000 tickets that weren't selling towards the end of the year, I don't know. But obviously, I think at this point in his life and in his time as the owner, he's seen a decision that he made a long time ago and decisions that he didn't make it over the past, 7-8 years when it was ripe to move on from Marvin Lewis, that, my unwillingness to do something that I probably should have done in the past is kind of finally catching up to me. And if I want to, do the thing that I'm telling people that I want to do, and that's build a Super Bowl team, I can't have this leadership continue here, or otherwise I'm not going to sell any tickets. Because I think if Marvin Lewis came back, they would not have sold, more than 30,000 seats a game. That's gonna be like the 49ers. Like, it would just be half filled at most.
For sure.
And if the blackout rules, didn't exist now, it just wouldn't be televised on TV, and that wouldn't be good for anything. And even if for someone who has been notoriously stubborn as Mike Brown, that definitely, I think, send a message. And everybody kind of has a breaking point. And people may not have thought that Mike Brown could bend, but even at 83 years old, he's shown that he can bend. And to the Dave Shula point, I think that if Zach Taylor does turn out to be Dave Shula, he's not going to be here for 16 years. If you miss, you can swing again. And that goes for quarterbacks as well. When you're trying to establish the two most important things for a football team, that's head coach and quarterback. And if they don't work, you don't have to be stuck there for too long where it would be too late for the rest of your team. You can go ahead and try again. And that's something that a lot of fans need to understand, where if you do hire Dave Shula, you won't be automatically put into 12 years of misery again. And if Zach Taylor does be mediocre, you won't automatically have 16 years of him again. Those are mistakes that were made in the past. And I think even for a team like the Bengals, they have a certain level of evolution and learning from their past mistakes. And even if it's as slow as they are, those mistakes are learned from, even for organizations that aren't as competent as others.
You have to give Mike Brown a little bit of credit, because he was asked a question about Marvin Lewis during the introductory press conference of Zach Taylor. I mean, not that most people would do this, but he had an opportunity to kind of take a shot at Marvin Lewis or say, this is why Zach Taylor's the guy and Marvin Lewis is not. He basically took the higher road and said, I'm not going to take this opportunity to slight Marvin Lewis. I'm not going to do it. And that shows Mike Brown's loyalty, and it's loyalty to a fault, right? I mean, we've said that too. He has a hard time getting rid of certain players. He endears himself to certain players, certain coaches, whoever. And for better or for worse, he's like, this is my guy. And, you know, I think that was probably a little bit of the scenario with Marvin Lewis. And finally, it was like, it's time. Whether it was the pocketbook effect or what have you, he kind of said, I just can't do this anymore. It can't happen.
And I think that's the same exact thing with, like, the players when they were, you know, excited, whether they were excited about Taylor or they were more reserved. Like none of those players would speak ill of Marvin, but most of them realized that the change needed to happen for the betterment of their careers and for the betterment of the organization. Like, no one should really have any ill thoughts of Marvin Lewis when you look at it from an overall standpoint. Obviously, it could have ended better, and you could have had more opportunities for, you know, legit championship runs in there. But at the end of the day, he was still a decent coach and just a decent human being and someone that had value in the organization and obviously was a close friend to anyone associated with him in the 16 years. So it was definitely a good move by Mike to, you know, stand behind him and not take the opportunity to by his words, disparage him. But also, I don't think there was a reality where Mike Brown would ever do that, because if you show loyalty to someone that long, you know, things just don't change in an instant where your whole perception and opinion on someone just completely alters just because, you know, drastic changes happen. So it was good by Mike, but I didn't really expect him to do anything different, I guess.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, it is what it is. And this is something now where they've hitched their wagon to Taylor, and that's where they're heading. I mean, it's, you mentioned something about, you know, oh, we'll see if this, you know, changes free agency or the approach is there. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of sway, if any, and if that is his sway that he wants, that the hill he wants to die on, so to speak, in terms of Taylor, you know, free agency, all that stuff. It's going to be interesting to see if he's the guy that kind of has more sway and that sort of thing. And, you know, for those who are saying yay about Taylor, young, offensive-minded, and I think that's the majority of Bengals fans, and you should be feeling that way, you have to also recognize that, you know, even if he does make certain changes, it's based off of the foundation that Marvin Lewis built. He had his flaws, he had his this and that, but Marvin Lewis set a standard. Mike Brown budged in ways that he had not budged in for a long time. And you have to hope that Zach Taylor then says, okay, Marvin Lewis laid this groundwork. Now we have to move here, 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 here. These are the positions we have to look at. You know, maybe it's a different quarterback because Dalton and Lewis were attached to the hip, whatever. But you have to sit here and say, okay, you know, Taylor maybe can build off of what Lewis did.
Yeah, and if you allow me to make a radical analogy here. As an econ major, I happened to learn about the six stages of communism and how China really screwed themselves in the 20th century when, I believe it was in the mid 20th century, when they tried to skip capitalism on the way to communism, and they ended up suffering and ended up going 20 years behind the rest of the world in terms of overall economic development. And what happened in the 1980s is that, hey, on the way going to communism, we kind of skipped capitalism, and that's just no bueno, and it went against everything.
Oh, by the way, right?
yeah, it's not great. So what happened was that China's like, hey, we're gonna backtrack a little bit because we skipped an important step on the way to going to where we need to go. Ended up, you know, creating this economic surge and boom in the 1980s, and now China is where they are because of that. For the Bengals, in this case, they ended up in the dirt in the 90s, Marvin Lewis brought him to stage two in this case, and that's mediocrity. This is the opportunity for them to go to stage three, which is legit contending. And if Taylor ends up being that guy, then the process over 20-something years finally worked, and they can pat their hats on that. And if it doesn't work, again, swing again. Go find the next guy. Don't wait 16 years before doing that.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Yep. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sheeran, and in case you didn't know, he is much smarter than I am because he is an econ major, and I was a lowly history poli-sci major myself. So
that
he is
a lot more fun than econ.
Maybe, sort of, kind of. At any rate, he is a much smarter man than I am on many levels. John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. You can get this show on iTunes, Stitcher, on Google Play and Megaphone, YouTube, CincyJungle.com. Get the show how you can. I mentioned last week, just kind of a little sidebar, and I just want to, I'm still stoked on it. We are seeing a record number of downloads and everything on this program, and I am super excited about it. And again, it's probably due to the addition of my far superior intellect co-host, John Sheeran, and his great following that he has on social media. But I say that tongue in cheek, but literally, John, you've been an awesome addition to this show, and I can't thank you enough. I can't thank our listeners enough based on some of the, the numbers don't lie, right? I mean, it's just.
You guys have been killing it.
Yeah, and it's crazy, and I also want to take this part of the reason why some of the numbers have been great have been because we have also had Tyler Boyd on the show twice in the last month. We just had him on again last week, and there's a propensity of sometimes interviewing the same guy in a month, especially in the off season, you know, kind of saying, oh, what do you.
He's an interesting interview. We should interview him every month. We just make it a regular thing.
I tried to make it a little different. I did a little lightning round with him and all that kind of stuff. And if you have not heard Tyler speak, if you have not heard the interviews, whether it's with us or other outlets that he has reached out to, he's a very, very nice young man. He is a very humble young guy. And I got to tell you, just in the little interaction I've had with him, he is a guy that is very, very excited about the Zach Taylor hiring. He seems to really like being a Cincinnati Bengal, even though he's a Pittsburgh native. We'll keep that under wraps. But he seems to be a guy that really likes being a Cincinnati Bengal. He likes what has happened. He relishes his breakout year last year. So, we've been fortunate to talk to him and recently a couple of times. Hopefully you have seen that interview or those interviews and have enjoyed them as well. But our thanks, just aside from all of the listeners who have been downloading the program, our thanks also to Tyler Boyd. John, unfortunately, you were not there when we were able to interview him, but I'm sure you've heard them, and he's a stand-up guy.
He truly is. So, Anthony.
Yes.
Bengals have hired some coaches.
I was going to go there, and I let's go there. Okay, so I know you got a lot to say about this, so I want to put the ball in your court there. But tell me about some coaches that you have seen and your thoughts, I guess, on some of these guys.
So let's go ahead and read. What Zach Taylor said in his press conference about finding coaches. And I quote, "What we're looking for are great teachers, concise communicators, outside-the-box thinkers, and people who are not afraid to deviate from the norm. We're in the process of organizing a great coaching staff that you guys will be very proud of, and the players are going to be excited to play for." So, I think it's pretty obvious at this point that Taylor wants to surround himself with associates, former associates of him in his 10-year, very young coaching career. One of those well-known associates is Jim Turner, who for the past 3 years has been the offensive line coach for Texas A&M. Before that, he was also with Texas A&M in 2008 to 2011, the first 4 years of Zach Taylor's coaching career when he was a grad assistant. And when Taylor moved to the Miami Dolphins in 2012, Turner followed him as the offensive line coach. Just so happens that when Turner was there, so was two guys named Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin. I think we all know what happened with those two and the, yeah, there's a bullying scandal that Incognito started and just pulverized verbally Martin for I don't know how long. And Turner ended up getting fired for it because he was complicit in the process and also partook in said bullying of Jonathan Martin, who just this past year was shown on Instagram with a threatening caption and a picture of guns towards his former teammates, because for some reason, bullying does have a mental impact on those victims and can deteriorate their minds and their so psyches. So Turner ended up suing the investigative report that got him fired because he couldn't work for some reason after his reputation was stained because he was a known complicit bullying as a coach. But then he got a job back at Texas A&M in 2016. And then in his first couple months, he had a coaching clinic for women's there. And in that coaching clinic, he made some very inappropriate and sexist remarks and comments about offensive line play. If you can somehow even comprehend how that would be involved there. But regardless, Turner ended up working there for the last 3 years. And now he is the replacement to Frank Pollock. That quote that Taylor said applies to nothing that Jim Turner is. And I know that he and Taylor have worked for many years, and I'm sure Taylor knows him very well. But how the hell does Zach Taylor sell a Jim Turner hire after saying what he said in the press conference?
That, I waver on this because I'm sure there's another coach that you're going to talk about that has some issues. I waver on it in the fact that unless you're Paul Alexander, who was also an assistant head coach / offensive line coach, the overall responsibilities and the overall level of I don't know what you want to call it, the overall level of accountability or name of title or whatever. Offensive line coach to me doesn't scream they're you know, doesn't scream high profile coach, doesn't scream that this is the guy that's going to be the face of the franchise, doesn't scream any of that stuff. We've also seen the Bengals have some redemption stories in terms of Tank Johnson, in terms of Adam Jones, in terms of some other guys that have come in here with all kinds of terrible pasts and have come in here and made themselves viable, made themselves relatively good contributors to the team and have helped the team turn into winners. I do not condone anything that is in Turner's past. I also have not been in any of the rooms or anything in terms of people associated with him and or what his reasoning behind some of this behavior is, so I can't fully speak to it. If I'm going to try and at least somewhat back him, which is hard to do. But I also, you know, some of the stuff I have seen under his watch and everything, I can't condone. I can't, you know, I sit here and I go, why? You know, the quote unquote good old boy mentality or the football guy mentality, or it just doesn't work today. It just doesn't. That he may fall back on, I don't know. I think on one hand, this is a little bit overblown in terms of fan behavior a little bit or fan reaction, but at the same time, it's also, I get it. You know, I mean, this is supposed to be a new era. This is supposed to be a new regime and all of that. And Taylor literally says, like you just said, John, he literally says, you know, we're looking for this type of personality, straight-laced people, X, Y, and Z. And a day, less than a day after, it's not the people they're targeting for critical positions are not of that ilk. And that's a little disappointing. So it's kind of like, you know, are these things that are going to go the way of a Tank Johnson or Adam Jones? Or is it going to be what bit them in the butt for so long in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, in terms of character issues, same old Bengals, quote-unquote, and everything else? And are these the type of people that are going to define the Zach Taylor regime in a negative way? And I hope not.
Yeah, and to play devil's advocate, I guess, with the Tank Johnson and Adam Jones point, like with Marvin Lewis, and what made him, you know, such a unique coach was that he presented himself as a father figure for some players who ended up getting in trouble. Zach Taylor's 35, and I think that Turner's Turner's like in his late 40s or maybe in his 50s now. Like obviously Taylor's not going to look over Turner as in the same manner, and you know. A point that we talked about with Taylor potentially building his staff was bringing in veterans that he could therefore lean on to handle some leadership responsibilities in different position groups and just general aspects of running the team. And, you know, we talked a lot about that with a potential defensive coordinator hiring. And when we talked about Bill Callahan, that was another thing that we discussed, because Callahan has history with Taylor as his head coach in college, and he could kind of lean on him in terms of game planning, the run game, and just overall designing the structure of the offense. And now we have to kind of assume that that's going to be what Turner is responsible for as well. Not only just, you know, refining technique for his offensive line, but implementing Taylor's scheme and, you know, having a significant responsibility there. At the end of the day, the Bengals' record will not be dependent upon Turner's coaching ability. And by the way, he's not even that – his resume doesn't really bode well for him as an offensive line coach at the professional or college level. But regardless, you know, my main reservation for this is just – he's just not, like, I can safely say that he's just not the kind of guy that you want to bring in at all for any type of head coaching, you know, for any type of team and structure with whoever's the head coach and whoever is leadership of that team. And in this case, it's a young first-time head coach, and you're bringing in a guy with ample experience as an offensive line coach who has experience working with him, but also he's not going to be – Taylor's not this commanding figure yet where he can – you know, assert leverage and power over his assistants. He's going to, at this and the very early stages of his career, he's going to be relying upon them to handle a lot of some of the end game and scheme implementation responsibilities. And Turner's going to have a heavy hand in that. And we have, you know, a guy with his history and the way that and his conduct and how he treats and handles, you know, player interaction and just overall player development. It's a major pause for concern for me. And he's going to have to work extremely hard to make sure that anything that he's done in the past will not be indicative of what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of like, do you reside in the camp of, I now question Zach Taylor's decision-making capability by bringing in people like this, right? I mean, it's Turner's a questionable character. I don't know him personally. You probably don't know him personally. He might be a swell guy at home. I don't know, right? But there are things that point to him not being a great human being. And that it's a balancing act that Zach Taylor now has to do. It's, I'm a first-time head coach. I'm going to bring in people that I think are capable head coaches as well as people I trust. And these are people that he has connections to. Aubrey Pleasant is another guy as well, right, that he's connected to. So he is familiar with them. There's the nepotism, I guess, aspect of it, if you will. But you have to sit here and go, okay, well, do you sit here and say, okay, he knows Jim Turner well, and he knows him well enough to be a guy that says, you know what, that's what he's been raked over the coals for, rightfully so, is not really who he is. And he's a good football coach, a good person. I'm going to hire him, regardless of fan backlash. Or is it PR be damned. And, you know, I'm going to get the best coach. I mean, it's kind of like, well, what side of the scale do you balance more? The relationship aspect or, you know, kind of PR stuff. And Jim Turner brings a lot of PR nightmare, especially in kind of the current landscape of things. He brings a lot of baggage to a team that really doesn't need it.
Yeah, for the YouTube viewers, I'm sorry. I kind of look like one of those guys in the witness protection because I think a fuse just blew in my house and my lights went out. But yeah, to your point,
I was gonna say I thought I saw like a shot or something.
but to answer your question, I understand the logic with Turner's hiring because you know Taylor wants to have the guys that he trusts the most and. Yeah, but like it's safe to say that you know he's worked with Turner for a decent amount of time, and Turner almost followed Taylor to the University of Cincinnati in 2016, but I think he backed out of the job to return to Texas A&M. So I get the logic because if you're going to be relying on these guys so much, you want to have guys that you trust and that you've worked with before, and that you think you can manage in a certain way because you have that experience with them. It doesn't mean I have to appreciate or accept the logic. I just understand it because like just me in general, I don't want people like this a part of associated with the team that I associate myself with because he is who he is. And there's a certain point where like, you know, there is a redemption possibility, but we're talking about a guy who's basically he is who he is at this point, and it's not just an isolated incident; it's multiple incidents that present itself to be a trend. And if we want to talk about a potential redemption story, we should have probably talked about that before he sued the report that got him fired and basically proclaimed his innocence and didn't display any type of remorse or any type of understanding of the gravity of his actions. So at this point, I think we can just accept he is who he is and just have to hope for the best that none of those problems follow to the Cincinnati Bengals in any major way where it would be a detriment and would cause any similar incidents in the future.
Yeah, and like from a fan standpoint, like Bengals ownership and everything else. Are you okay over there, buddy? I'm a little worried about you.
I'm looking for my other leg. Honestly,
I mean, like Bengals ownership, fans are going to have to sit here and say, you know what? The team trusted enough to hire Zach Taylor. He obviously presented some form of a plan, whether it's assistant coaches, roster, or both. He came up with some sort of plan that said, this is what I have for you guys. And everybody signed off on it. Maybe Jim Turner was a name that was thrown around. Maybe he wasn't. But you kind of have to think, like, if a guy like Jim Turner and his history – is going to be brought into the Bengals. You have to think that Zach Taylor said, this is a guy I'm thinking of bringing in. It had to be known. I don't think this is a surprise to anybody in Bengals management. Now, whether you like it as a fan or whatever, I mean, that's a different story, but you have to figure the Bengals knew about it. And this is part of Taylor's plan. This is probably a plan that he gave to the Bengals management when he was interviewing for the job, and they probably have some sort of plan for potential fallout with something like this. I don't know, but it is disappointing. It's not somebody who's being given a massive amount of responsibility in terms of title. It's kind of a lateral move, if that makes anybody feel better about anything. I don't know. But, I mean, he's still being given probably a big opportunity as we go forward. And then, John, I think you were the one on CincyJungle.com who wrote the piece on it's Jason Markham. They want to interview Aubrey Pleasant. I don't know if you have any additional thoughts on that aside from Jim Turner and all of that. But basically, it shows that Zach Taylor is leaning on his Rams connections, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, like the Bengals are buying into becoming the Rams, essentially, because if Zach Taylor is – because he said, like, are you going to bring any, like, like Sean McVay's offense over here, and he's like, well, it works, right? So like that's going to be the base of what we do. I'm not going to be exactly like Sean McVay, but you know, if you're bringing an offense that is a version of it or an evolution of it, then I guess this is the equivalent of bringing a version of a Wade Phillips type defense, because he worked under Phillips as a secondary coach. And in his bio, I actually looked it up just before the show. It was like, it was similar to how McVay said that Taylor is a significant part of our third down game planning. And then like there was under Pleasant's bio said he's a significant part of Wade Phillips's overall game planning. So it's kind of like that similarity there and that congruency between the two coaches. So yeah, I think this would be a decent hire because he's also a young defensive mind, and he's obviously worked under a great defensive mind in Wade Phillips. So if you want to implement any team, you might as well implement the team that made it to the Super Bowl and probably should have beat a Patriots team if they had a better quarterback.
Well, yeah, we've got a lot more to get to on this show, and I want to talk about that in just a second. Before we get to the Super Bowl and all that kind of stuff, we do have a caller on the line, and it is one of our regulars, Terrell. Terrell, this is Anthony Cosenza with the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. How are you, sir?
How are you doing, Anthony? How are you doing, John?
Pretty good.
We're doing good, man. What's on your mind tonight?
I just want to say, we really excited about new fresh breath air change. He's finally here. He was talking about just being razor sharp focus and making people accountable, and no matter who it is, the superstars or the free agents. And one thing I just want to say, like, just a couple internal things that's already on the thing for the Arizona team. I believe that Sean Williams, was the best linebacker on the Bengals last year. Hardy Niggas is gone for us. You already know what Dante is gone for us. I mean, and Vinny Ray, you know, he's past his prime. And Evans, we giving him, he's coming along. But if you put at least 15 more pounds on him, man, I'm trying to tell you, he's a playmaker. He reminds me of Jalen Smith. Put a little 15, 20 pounds on, I think he's going to be a linebacker. I really do believe that. And another thing, I know we always said we were trying to get Vontaze or Dre somewhere. One of the two got to get traded. But I was thinking about a player that I feel like we don't really use for real, not how we should be. Maybe Zach would change that, but Giovanni Bernard, I know y'all love him and everything like that, but we might get some type of conversation for him, at least a second or third for him, man.
Yeah.
That could really do
stuff
for us.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Terrell. We're going to answer your questions off the air. Appreciate the call as always, my friend, and thanks for tuning in, and we appreciate your loyalty to the program, my friend.
I just want you to know that this whole podcast, everything's going on. And I'm telling some of my friends about you. Every chance I get, I'll talk about you.
But, that's awesome, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate it. And we do this for people like yourself. So we appreciate that, and we appreciate your loyalty to the program and viewership, all that good stuff. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you next week. First of all, that's awesome that, I mean, he's spreading the word about it. There's a couple of things that Terrell said that I thought that resonated. Actually, I spoke to my brother last night, a fellow Bengals fan. We talked about Giovanni Bernard, and we said, you know, we didn't go the route Terrell did with him in terms of trade bait. We went the other way and saying, Zach Taylor's probably a guy that can get the most out of Gio Bernard, I think. You know, I think back to the Eagles, and I'm thinking back to Andy Reid days. I'm thinking, you know, the Eagles have been a pillar of a team that has used running backs in a number of effective ways and have done so that have helped the team. And I think that that's probably what Taylor's going to do with the Bengals and Gio Bernard. I think Joe Mixon established himself as one of the best running backs in the NFL last year. And I think you can use Gio Bernard, maybe as a kick returner, maybe as a special teams guy, and obviously as a third down slash utility back. And I think that the Bengals need to go back to that.
Yeah, you mentioned the Eagles. You can imagine using Bernard as Brian Westbrook.
Yeah, Brian Westbrook, or even
Darren Sproles.
That's the other one. Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Like, there's like the last 4 or 5 years of Gio Bernard has been, you know, simple inside runs and then just a swing past the outside where he gets blown up in 0.2 seconds because Dalton telegraphed the throw completely ridiculously, and you have guys like Alvin Kamara running Texas and option routes out of the backfield and making linebackers look silly. And you just wonder, Brian Bernard's not that much different of an athlete than, you know, some of the other great pass catching backs in the NFL. And they paid him like an expensive, you know, rotational back, and they should probably use him at this point. And Terrell, to your other point with Sean Williams, watching the Patriots and the Chargers in the postseason just late down the season, like those are two defenses that don't abide by the traditional rules of NFL defenses. And they use a lot of guys who you could classify as third-level defenders as, you know, box defenders and run defenders in general that can scrape over the top and just use that explosiveness and speed closer to the line of scrimmage, the better, and making those impact plays. And Sean Williams, that's his strength, and that's why I think he was kept over a guy like George Iloka to play alongside Jesse Bates, to play more inside the box. I don't think Sean Williams needs to bulk up to 2020 to be a good linebacker, because a good linebacker in the NFL is not what it was 10 years ago, and you can use guys all over the field and all over the box and not have to worry about them getting, you know, clogged by second level blockers. You can use Sean Williams how the Patriots use some of their safeties and how they can just, you know, disguise some of their pre-snap looks, run defense, and really take advantage and be a more effective defense. And that's something I hope we see.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Sean, if you talk about Sean Williams specifically, Sean Williams was a guy that his knock coming into the NFL draft was the guy hasn't covered at the college level. You know, he was a guy that was in the box safety and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, okay, well, you know, what are the Bengals going to do with this kind of guy? And he, to be quite honest with you, the guy had like 5 interceptions last year. So, yeah. I mean, the guy has turned his career around in his supposed weak spots. The guy has turned his career around in a really big way, but I agree with kind of what you're saying, John, in terms of today's NFL landscape, what teams need, what, you know, I mean, you look at the Rams and Mykel Roby, right? A kind of a tweener guy. They had Mark Barron, another guy who's been a tweener guy. You know, maybe that's where the league is heading. Maybe that's where the Bengals are heading in terms of, you know, they need to have these guys that have the size of a bigger safety, but can tackle and are able to play in space like some older linebackers. And, right. You know, that might be where they're heading. We'll see. But great call from Terrell. We've got another call on the line from another regular, John from Kentucky. John, how are you, sir?
To talk to you guys again tonight.
Yeah, good to have you on, man.
Yeah, I love your podcast, as always. You know, John Sheeran was talking a minute ago something about China and communism.
I thought
communism. Now, let's see. Communism started in Russia. Why did that start? Well, let's see. They had a royal family that had been in power for 300 years. Let's just cut to the chase. It was time for them to go, okay? Now, I'm not a communist, but the last czar they had was just making decisions on things he had no knowledge of. It was time for him to get lost. Anyway, we kind of had one in Cincinnati for 16 years, and it was just time for the guy to go. That's kind of what I got out of that. So I am very confident in Zach Taylor, and if he doesn't do well, I agree. He won't be here 16 years. We'll move on from him in 2 or 3 years. Who knows? I hope we don't end up like the Browns, where we're, you know, kicking people out every other year. But at the same time, you know, the team is in nowhere near the condition it was when Dave Shula took over. We have our own stadium. Right. We're not in trouble with the IRS. Paul Brown didn't just pass away on us. We're in pretty good shape. I think we're going to be fine.
Well, that's and I got to tell you, normally from other callers, I'd sit here and say, like, whatever. But you have seen a lot with this franchise. You have seen, you have experienced a lot. You have been through a lot with this franchise. So I would I take your word for it. John, before we get you off the air here, your take on Dre Kirkpatrick, and I don't know how big of a social media guy you are, but your take on Dre Kirkpatrick sticking up for a guy who I know, you know, in our conversations, a guy I know you who has been in your personal doghouse, a guy who stuck up for the Bengals franchise, a guy who stuck up for Bengals fans everywhere in terms of what Jeremy Hill recent Jeremy Hill remarks. I would be very interested to hear what you have to say about Dre Kirkpatrick on that regard.
Well, first of all, I don't follow Dre Kirkpatrick. He's not my favorite player. I mean, on social media. So you'll have to educate me first. What did he say?
Okay, well, basically, Jeremy Hill, as you know, is on the Patriots and was injured. I guess I got to educate you, John. And this is a good segue to another thing we're going to be talking about anyway, so it's good. But basically, Jeremy Hill, member of the Patriots, did not play a meaningful snap with New England. On his Instagram page, basically took a shot at Bengals fans, saying, "Imagine being a Bengals fan today." A video of it while he was obviously engaging in the Patriots parade festivities and all that kind of stuff. And Dre Kirkpatrick fired back on the same social media platform, saying, "Imagine something to the effect of, 'I wouldn't want to win a championship trophy if I didn't play a meaningful snap.'"
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't forgotten Jeremy Hill fumbling the ball in the playoff game. Is that what it's
even? Nobody has.
Is he referring to that?
Nobody has. Yeah, I mean,
yeah. I mean, Burfict just intercepted the ball. There's a minute and a half left. What does Jeremy Hill do? He gives it right back to Pittsburgh. Yep. Thanks a lot, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and Hugh Jackson put him in. And Hill had been prone to fumbling all year. They benched him several times for that. Why you wouldn't trust Burkhead for such little time on the clock before you would Jeremy Hill?
No, Burkhead or Bernard.
Or Bernard, exactly. Well, yep. What just happened? The house cleaning that happened in Cincinnati should have happened after that game, and it should have happened after the Chargers game years before.
Yep.
So, going back to the Czar Russia thing, it was just time for some people to go.
Yep. So, you are 100% correct. Thanks, John. We're gonna get you off the air here. I appreciate you calling in and listening, as always, my friend. John from Kentucky, great call as always. And as a history guy, like I mentioned earlier in the show, you gotta love that. But this, we used to have a segment here, John from Sheeran Clan, not John from Kentucky.
First of his name.
Yeah. We used to have, and I kind of wanted to do that this week, the hater of the week. And the hater of the week is Jeremy Hill of the Bengals. And I could not believe, I mean, I kind of believe it, but at the same time, it's kind of like, dude, move on. Like, unless there are some turd Bengal fans out there, and if you're listening to this program, yeah, I'll single you out. If you have the time to go on social media and dog Jeremy Hill for something that happened 3 years ago, yes, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible moment in Bengals history. But if you're sitting here using your free time to go dog a professional athlete about a screw up he did, then shame on you. I mean, right? But at the same time, shame on Jeremy Hill for using a big platform that he has, and instead of saying, like, hey, he doesn't even need to mention the Bengals. He doesn't even need to talk about them. And he basically gives them the middle finger, and the fans the middle finger publicly on one of the biggest social media platforms there is.
Yeah, this finger hit for him wasn't busy enough. He had to utilize this one too.
Exactly.
It's just like I don't know if you follow Kevin Durant in the NBA and the things that he does, but every time
I follow not Kev Durant or.
But like every time I see Durant tweet, I'm just like, what are you doing? And this is this is preposterous. And what the potential situation that you describe is basically the only logical and reasonable explanation for why he would do this. He's looking at the 5% of Bengals fans who still taunt him about the fumble. Yeah. And like he's using those 5% of fans and generalizing the entire fan base of doing so, and basically trying to dunk on all of us who, for the most part, haven't thought of Jeremy Hill since he left for the Patriots, because there's never been a less relevant Super Bowl winner than Jeremy Hill. He played 4 snaps during the regular season. He hasn't played since September. And like, he's not even the best former Bengal on that roster. Rex Burkhead has been a valuable contributor for the past 2 years to the Patriots. And I think that's also why Drake Patrick said, congratulations, Rex Burkhead, on your Super Bowl championship. But honestly, just this could not have possibly netted a positive outcome for anybody involved, because it just triggered every Bengals fan who, again, did not think of Jeremy Hill at all during the Super Bowl, during this season in general, and just triggered them into adding him and just egging him on and creating even more of a stirrup and more of a fire and just making the situation worse for them and just feeding Jeremy Hill exactly what he wanted. And that was, you know, obviously triggered Bengals fans who are reminded of the very thing that Jeremy Hill did. That was just why people hate him and why some Bengals fans despise him, but not to the point where they were, for the most part, Bengals fans did not engage Jeremy Hill that much on social media about what he did. They moved on from that point because it was just the time for him to move on. The expiration of his rookie contract, he just had no value here anymore. Go make yourself with a good team of the Patriots. Like, there's no need to dance on a grave that was not stirring up anything in the first place other than just a handful of people on the side. If you're going to look at those few Bengals fans who enter your mentions about, you know, the unfortunate act that you did as a Bengals fan, as a member of the Bengals team back in 2015, that's fine. But don't lump every single one of us into the same thing and just cause yourself to be dunked on by everybody who did not think twice about you.
There are a couple things here that made me – first of all, like you said, I kind of was like, oh, that's right. He's on the Patriots. I mean, I honestly forgot. I was like, oh. There is a part of me that says, okay, why is New England so great at taking – trash heap guys. And now granted, Jeremy Hill didn't do much for this year's championship run, but there's Rex Burkhead, there's Devlin, the fullback, there is they grabbed Chad Johnson at one point, they had Corey Dillon at one point, they had Delph O'Neal after Delph O'Neal was on the Bengals, they had Artrell Hawkins after that he was on the bank. They grabbed these guys that, you know, have contributed elsewhere. They get them cheaper and they say, come in. And part of me is like, why does that team know how to do that and nobody else knows how to do that? Right. I think the spotlight is brighter because they're just constantly in the championship game. But at the same time, it's also they're in the championship game for practices like that. Right.
Right. I think it's Sam Monson, who is one of the main guys for PFF. I think he said something tremendous about, yeah, here we go. Bill Belichick's readiness versus every other coach is a fundamental approach thing. Most coaches have a system with various various gradations of how successful that system is. Where they struggle is when the system gets stymied. Belichick has game plans. They're dynamic. And I think that's the main fundamental difference between Belichick and the 31 other head coaches. People implement systems, and when the system needs to change, you know, it's hard to change something so
rigid.
Yeah, exactly. It's not fluid. It's not liquid. Belichick, and the reason why the Patriots have always been so good at countering every single team and eliminating everybody's strength is because they're so fluid and they can implement guys who kind of buy in to the fluid game plan, and they always will be able to identify which player's strengths that they have and put them in the best possible situation. They will never run the same offense every 2 weeks. And whenever you try to do something that's successful against them, they'll find a way to adapt because they don't have anything that they're committed to. So when they bring in these mid-level guys, these cheap guys, and somehow they ended up being a lot better than what they're paid to do, it's because they find and identify the strengths that they have, and they just work around that. And whatever they do on offense or defense is completely predicated upon the 11 guys who are on the field at that certain point in time. They can run a spread offense that they can go two by two in the shotgun. They can have Brady spread the ball around, or they can go in 21 personnel against, like they did against the Rams, and just run it down your throat. It's all dependent upon who is available to them at the time, because they can utilize anybody that they want to, because they're not tied down to anything. They're so adaptive and capable of evolving because they have a head coach that recognizes that things are so fast paced and moving in the NFL, and you need to have that mindset to essentially utilize what you have. And that's, I think, exactly why they can take the Jeremy Hills and the Rex Burkheads and, you know, whoever else they can grab off from the Browns roster, I guess, and just make them into quality players.
Yeah. And I mean, this feeds into a couple of listener questions we'll get to before we get out of here. We're going long, but we started late. So, you know, we've got a couple of questions we want to get to aside from the calls we got. But the Patriots are the NFL chameleons, right? I mean, there are so many fads. There are so many fads. You know, everybody's, you know, multiple tight ends, multiple wide receivers, and, you know, the safety, cornerback, non-linebacker defense and all that kind of stuff. You know what? The Chiefs ran that stuff. The Rams ran that stuff. They put that stuff out there. They got a lot of attention for it, and rightfully so. But guess who won the Super Bowl? Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, guys who were able to figure out stuff with the people they had in the building and plans that with the people they had in the building to say, okay, run who you want out. We will do what we need to do, and we'll beat you. And that brings me kind of to, it's not necessarily a direct question that we received this week, but this is a question that I've seen a lot in Bengals forums, on Twitter, on all kinds of stuff, John. I mean, with what Zach Taylor is bringing to the Bengals, does the Super Bowl loss and the performance of Goff, does that taint your view, or should it taint your view, of Taylor coming to Cincinnati and what he is potentially capable of doing with the Bengals?
It should taint your view of Andy Dalton under Zach Taylor, because by all intents and purposes, Jared Goff is a more talented version of Andy Dalton, but they both have similar weaknesses where if you pressure them and if you force them to look beyond the certain amount of time where the ball needs to get out, they can get flustered and they can make bad decisions under pressure. And that's exactly what happened with the Patriots and, you know, how they did. Like the pass rush wasn't tremendous for the Patriots against the Rams, but their coverage was outstanding and they were able to confuse Goff. And there's only so much that a quarterback coach can do, especially when he's not the one talking into Goff's helmet mic up until 15 seconds since the clock. That's McVay's responsibility, and that's what he's always done. And that's been an advantage against teams that aren't the Patriots, who aren't so adaptive on the fly and who don't identify, you know, a quarterback like Goff's weaknesses. But, you know, people are talking about, you know, can Zach Taylor elevate Andy Dalton? Well, Andy Dalton's 32 years old. He's basically he is what he is at this point, and he can get the maximum of what he is at this point, but he can't probably get him to go any further. And for people who think that, you know, if Jared Goff can't, you know, score more than 3 points against the Patriots with that offense and that offensive line and those weapons around him, it's hard for me to believe that Andy Dalton could do such a thing, because that's the goal, right? It is to beat the Patriots until the Patriots aren't the dominant team anymore. And with a quarterback like Andy Dalton, I don't think that's a likely scenario, even with a guy like Zach Taylor. And if he's bringing that same system with the Rams, like we just saw, it's not a perfect system, because it's not the Patriots. And unless you have a quarterback like Mahomes or like a Drew Brees or someone who can elevate, you know, your surrounding talent, it's just really hard to do that, because you have to out Patriots the Patriots. And the only way that we've seen done that is if the quarterback just goes, you know, balls to the wall. If you have an Eli Manning or Nick Foles who can somehow out of the blue, you know, perform out of their minds. You know, if you have a quarterback like Andy Dalton, who's the worst playoff quarterback of all time, it's hard for me to see that happening, even with a coach who will presumably bring in some offensive innovations that help the Rams get to that position.
Right. Yeah, very well said. And my takeaway from this is Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are the, whatever you know, if you hate them or whatever, the stats show, the amount of rings show that they are the greatest dynasty or coach quarterback tandem ever.
Yeah.
Ever. Now, how much longer they'll be doing it is up for debate. My guess is probably within 5 years, I would say that one, if not both of those gentlemen will probably hang it up. My point is I look at it and I say, you know, I don't think this knocks Taylor. I don't think this knocks his prowess as a coach. I don't think any of that. My thing is, I just don't think there's someone, there is a couple in terms of a head coach quarterback out there or has yet to be linked up that can beat them. I mean, that is the NFL landscape at this point. I mean, they're not winning it every year, but I mean, what was it? 9 Super Bowls, 6 wins, something to that effect. I mean, it's absurd. It is absurd what those two have done, especially with sometimes the personnel they've brought into the Super Bowl. I mean, the fact of the matter is that it's going to take them retiring or some tandem better than them to be able to consistently compete in the AFC and consistently compete in the Super Bowl. And that is, they've captured lightning in a bottle, and good for them. Wonderful for the Patriots. But it's kind of an unfortunate reality, and it's not a slight against Zach Taylor. It's an unfortunate reality that teams just aren't they don't have that there. They don't have that relationship, quarterback coach relationship, that has been able to net these amount of Super Bowls. They don't have that in their back pocket.
No, and you know, Belichick is the mastermind behind the whole thing. He's the greatest head coach of all time. There's no question about it. But like we just talked about, you know, the Patriots don't have a system like other teams have a system, but they do have a network of coaches and players that also form the whole thing together. Like Brady and McDaniels basically handle the offense and are able to change on a moment's notice. Dante Scarnecchia, who's the offensive line coach, might be the greatest offensive line coach of all time. You wonder why Brady doesn't ever get hit and why the Rams pass rush was nullified for most of the second half. It's because that they handle stunts and packages and can run any scheme and run blocking because they're just so well coached with that. And then obviously Belichick handles the defense and you know, his defensive coordinators always seem to get promotions and whatnot. So there is a system and a level of cohesion and communication and connections throughout the entire staff because they're minded by, you know, one, you know, spearhead in Belichick. And I think with what Taylor was talking about in the introductory conference, it was clear communication, clear connections, clear cohesion throughout the entire staff, all be on the same page. That's kind of what, you know, abridged version of what the Patriots have in that. And I think that's very important for what Zach Taylor needs to build. He needs, you know, his offense needs to be on the same page and have a defense that is able to, you know, go with those similar philosophies and kind of all be on one cohesive page. And that's a part of it. But again, it's obviously Brady is Brady. You know, he's not the greatest thrower of the football of all time, but the way he reads the field and the way he communicates with McDaniels and the system that they've obviously instituted is second to none, and how they can consistently maintain drives. And it's just part of the process, I guess. And that's the process that Taylor needs to try to emulate to the best of his ability and just bring in, you know, guys, players, coaches that will best work under the type of system that he wants to implement.
Yeah, I can't think of another team who has done a better job of adapting to what their opponents do than the New England Patriots. Now the Patriots don't have the best roster, I don't think, in the league.
No.
They probably have the best coach and the best quarterback in the league. But what they do is they just adapt, adapt, adapt. I mean, I saw briefly before we came on to the program tonight, I saw something that NFL Network was coming on. It was the old, God, I don't know, 2001 or I don't know when it was. It was the Super Bowl where they played the Panthers. And it was with Jake Delhomme, Steve Smith, Julius Peppers. I mean, there are a lot of guys on that team where you go, wow. And that team, the the Panthers team is very well rounded, regardless of your thoughts of Jake Delhomme. Very well rounded. And it was a team that could put up points. It was a team that could do a lot of. They had Dan Morgan at linebacker, a good linebacker. I mean, they could do a lot of things well.
Yeah.
What did the Patriots do? They ended up just kind of basically outscoring them that game. And it was a game that was like not really. Tom Brady threw a red zone interception. I mean, it was a game that was not pretty, but somehow they just keep doing it. And. You know, for those folks, those Bengals fans who are sitting here going, oh, this is a slight against Zach Taylor that, you know, his quarterback didn't play well. You know what? Yeah. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, it's the Patriots and we all got to deal with it until those guys are done. I mean, I it's just kind of a reality of the league at this point. So I wish I had a better answer for it, but that's kind of where we're at. We're going to do one more question before we get out of here. We've got a number of texts. We've got a number of questions in the YouTube chat. We appreciate it. This was an email question, and I wanted to get this from Mohammed Alomer, saying, greetings. I want to thank you guys for your show. I've been watching you for almost 2 years. I guess I'm your only fan from Saudi Arabia / Scotland. Wow. Well, that's cool. My first question is, we keep saying that we have so much talent on defense and so much of that talent got wasted. Do you agree that a priority high-level defensive coordinator is as important as a head coach? And then do you think we need two new starters at linebacker this year? Thanks for your email, Muhammad. I'm going to say this, and I'll let you, my esteemed co-host here, John, is more of the film guru and a little bit more of he dives more in depth on that front than I do in terms of the position group. I'm going to say this and kind of just basically what we talked about. Look, man, this is a quarterback head coach league, and you can sit here and say, hey, you know, the Rams did well because they had Wade Phillips as their defensive coordinator, an established coach in this league. It's a league that is built on you got to get your quarterback and you got to get a head coach that your players gravitate to. That's what it is. And I would not be surprised if the Rams are consistently in the playoff picture over the next handful of years. And I think the Bengals, to their credit, recognize the fact that this is a team that needed a change at head coach. I don't know if that means a change at quarterback. It could be coming, but that's what this league is. And I think the Bengals probably need an absolute overhaul at linebacker, especially with Marvin Lewis gone, a linebacker guru. But I'll let you talk about both those questions, John.
Yeah. You look at McVay and his early success, and, you know, he's obviously leaned a lot because he runs the offense and he puts – the entire defense in Wade Phillips' hand. Wade Phillips is one of the very best defensive coordinators of the, you know, this generation. And, you know, like to Anthony's point, the top four scoring offenses in the NFL ended up going to the AFC and NFC championship games. Scoring matters, and that's the only thing that matters. But also, if you don't have one of those top tier offenses, you're going to need your defense to play probably a little better than what the Bengals defense put out in 2018. So yeah, having that defense coordinator that a young head coach can, young offensive head coach can lean on is crucial in its own right. And getting that hired will matter to maximize, you know, some of these young guys who are going to try to, you know, take over for eventually when Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, you know, leave the team for their respective reasons. So yeah, getting the defensive coordinator hire is important, especially when you can't put up 30 points a game. And I don't think the Bengals offense will be able to do that in 2019 unless some major changes happen. And with the linebacker group, yeah, if one of those starters that we're talking about is Vontaze Burfict, means obviously did not start and probably not be on the team. Nick Vigil's a different story, I think, because I think there is still something there. It's not something great, maybe not even something good, but something that you can at least, you know, trot out there and to count on for a couple hundred snaps. You know, he wasn't completely healthy this year, and I think if he was, he would have had a little bit more to offer. But yeah, like Anthony said, a major overhaul at that position needs to happen, specifically with the depth that they have there. Vincent Gray probably needs to go. Hardy Nickerson definitely needs to go. Blake Jefferson needs to be given a chance to play significant snaps. They need at least another draft pick and a quality free agent signing there to kind of get that position level to some form of competency, because it was just amongst the very worst in the NFL. And when you have a defensive line that, like the Bengals last year, couldn't consistently create pressure, and then you have a scheme that opens the middle of the field so much like the Bengals defense does, then you're gonna be reliant on those linebackers and coverage to make open field tackles. And that was the two areas that the Bengals were just crap at. And unless they can just, you know, whoever leads that defense as a coordinator will probably implement a more linebacker friendly scheme in coverage and whatnot, but they definitely need just some more talent because there's just nothing resembling that there right now.
Yeah. And, you know, that goes back to, I think it was Terrell's call on our show talking about Sean Williams and, you know, is he almost a linebacker type of guy? You know, you got to have those capable guys in space. It is what it is, but yeah, the Bengals need an overhaul at that position. I mean, but I still go back to I waver on, you know, an elite defensive coordinator or, you know, I mean, I don't know if a lot of people would sit here and say Gary Kubiak is an elite coach, but he won a Super Bowl with, you know.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I mean, he won a Super Bowl with some revolving parts at defensive coordinator, and then, you know, you've seen what you saw this year. With the two teams in the Super Bowl, I don't, you know, Wade Phillips has been a head coach in this league and has been to at mixed results as a head coach at best. So to me, it's get your head coach and get your quarterback. That's what it's always about. You can get your great supporting staff like McVay did in a Wade Phillips and all that stuff. And that's probably something that Zach Taylor is going to try and emulate, but at the same time, it's kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, if you're the guy and you got your quarterback, then you're set. I mean, that's what this league is built on. And that is what this Super Bowl taught us. I think is coach, quarterback, you're gonna win. I mean, that's what it is. And you know, unfortunately, some of us who are not Patriots fans or followers of the Patriots probably have to wait until certain people retire for that torch to be passed, but that is what it is. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals. What's that?
Andy Dolan's not that quarterback. Go on.
He's not that quarterback. He is not, unfortunately. I wish I could say he was, but he is not that quarterback. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sharon. I'm Anthony Cazenza. You can get this show on Stitcher, on Google Play, on iTunes, on YouTube, and CincyJungle.com, as well as Megaphone. We appreciate all of the support that you have shown this show, especially as of recently. And hopefully you enjoyed our recent interview with Tyler Boyd. Check that out if you have not done so already. We are going to get out of here, though, because we have gone a little long this week and we started late. But I'm going to kick it over to my co-host if he has any final thoughts for this week.
Yeah, Aubrey Pleasant is better than Don Capers. So I hope that comes to fruition. I'm very interested to see who becomes the defensive line and linebackers coach. I imagine there's probably some Zach Taylor connections that I need to connect the dots with, but, you know, hopefully that happens before we come back here next Wednesday and we can get this full coaching staff on the wraps.
Yeah, and it seems I did put this on the Orange and Black Insider podcast feed, but it seems as if Ben Martin is going to be the team's some sort of assistant coach.
This is an offensive line.
Well, yeah, and James Casey will probably be coaching the tight ends group. Ironically, for those who remember, James Casey was actually brought in for a visit a handful of years ago by the Bengals.
Because he torched them in the playoffs when he was with the Texans.
Yeah, he's kind of an eight-pack guy. Different.
Yeah, he didn't torch him. His own Daniels did that, but I think he played for the Texans during that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's kind of an H-back guy, different guy. But, mm-hmm. You know, hey, whatever. I mean, I was a fan of the Hayes brothers. I thought they did some good work with the Bengals, but time to move in a new direction. And I think that that Casey could provide a good spark there. So that's just a little bit of an update there. But yeah, more things to come. The combine is just around the corner for the Cincinnati Bengals and every team in the NFL. I don't know if my colleague John Sharon will be going to that event or not, like he did with the Senior Bowl, but he is not.
No. Okay. No.
Okay. well, we'll try and get maybe some people from Indianapolis on the program and whatnot. But at any rate, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading the program, and we'll try and get some interviews and all kinds of different stuff coming up here on the program for you. But we appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate all the support, like I said. And hey, new era in Cincinnati officially coming in with Zach Taylor and his regime. Some hires will probably be liked. Some will not. We'll see. I'm Anthony Cosenza. He's John Sharon. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast, and we'll see you next time.